You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community culture, and everything in between. This week, we're talking about Bethesda joining Microsoft, new rumors from Naughty Dog, and more Activision Blizzard layoffs. This is episode number 43 for the week of March 22nd, 2021. I am Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the Games Industry Public Defender and the scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zelenkevich.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Yes, and I'd like to welcome any first-time listeners. Thank you guys very much for taking the time to check out the Mash Those Buttons show, and give a big thanks and welcome back to any returning listeners. So, Nick, how's your week been?
It's been a week. Really haven't played too much outside of WoW. But I'll talk about that in other locations, which I will sufficiently promote at the end of this show. my PlayStation started making a weird noise, and I had to take it apart. So I had to remove the stickers that void the warranty. Obviously, it's way older than the warranty, so that didn't matter. But then, I opened up. It was dusty in there. I had not opened that. Obviously, I hadn't opened up because I hadn't voided the warranty before. But it was dusty in there, and I cleared that out. Now it doesn't make any more weird noise, though. So hopefully that's all good.
I was about to say, this sounds familiar, but I'm pretty sure you brought that up last week when we tried recording it and we couldn't.
I wasn't going to get into the details of that, but yeah, that happened last week. That is correct.
Yeah, elephant in the room. We missed a recording last week. We just couldn't make it happen. We had an event happen during the recording.
We had a special guest who was my 1 year old who did not want to go to bed until 3 a.m. So that was fun.
Yeah. So we couldn't record last week, but that's why we're playing a little bit of catch up this week, talking about the Bethesda stuff and the, Naughty Dog stuff. The Activision Blizzard stuff is new though. So
yes.
Yeah. So, this week has been, I haven't had a chance to play too many games, because I'm actually taking the week off and I had to finish all my work stuff before I took the week off. Last week though, I was like addicted to Mini Metro. I played I want to say 20 or 30 hours of Mini Metro the week before. It's just such a simple game to play, and you know, you can play it while you're playing anything. I actually even ended up buying it on mobile. So if you don't know what Mini Metro is, it's like a people mover simulator, I guess you could say, where you are designing subway systems, essentially, right? When the game starts, they'll give you three shapes, like a circle, a triangle, and a square, and you got to connect them all together. And then as time goes on, they'll continue to add more shapes to the level, and you have to make these like rail lines essentially to get people from point A to point B. Each shape is a destination. So you can be on, somebody could be at the circle, but if they're a triangle, it'll show up as a triangle next to the circle. That means you have to get them, or the train needs to get them from the circle to the triangle, and they have to take the best route there. And it's basically just about optimization and stuff like that. So it's actually a really cool, addictive game. I ended up buying it on mobile. It cost $1 on the Google Play Store. So, I think I had more to say about it last week when it was fresh, when it was fresh for me. But now I'm like, yeah, it's good. Just check it out. It's nice. It's good. It's good. We can start heading into our topics. Before we do that, though, I definitely want to give a big thanks to our supporters on Patreon. Thank you guys very much. And also give a big thank you to our Twitch subscribers over at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. So if you want to know when we go live, you can just check us out there and give us a follow. If you also want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at The Mash Network. So twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. And you can join us on Discord as well, mash.gg/Discord, where we, you know, talk about things from The Mash's Button Show or any of the other podcasts that we have on the network. And there's a lot of people in there enjoying different games. So come join our community. We'd love to have you there. So, like I said, we're playing a little bit of catch up. I didn't want to just throw these topics away because we missed the week. I think they're still worth talking about a little bit. So, you know, I think the week before last, Bethesda or Microsoft had this like little event where it was like, you know, just kind of like a video of a few people from Microsoft, a few people from Bethesda talking about them finally. I guess the merger officially went through the other week. And now they're all one big team. So a couple takeaways from that. Microsoft did confirm that some titles from Bethesda will be exclusive to Xbox and PC.
No.
They did confirm what? That.
I thought that it was all still going to be on the PlayStation. I don't believe this. No. Well,
I don't think any of the titles they've already announced are like none of that's changing in my opinion.
The ink's dry on those contracts. You can't mess with that.
Yeah, even though I'm pretty sure, like, you know, stuff like I think Deathloop, I don't think it was a PS5 exclusive. I think it was just coming out earlier on PlayStation.
Yeah, that's not changing because they talked about this earlier. They said they would honor pre-existing agreements, but everything in the future is up for grabs. Like, you know, we don't know what we're not ready to talk about things that aren't ready to be talked about. And then lo and behold, here they are like, yeah, we're gonna have some. Of course they are. You don't make this deal if you're not gonna do that.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see what type of approach they take, right? Because so we're in this kind of weird space with Microsoft where we know that Microsoft wants their games as many places as possible. We already know that. If Microsoft, if Sony would allow xCloud onto the PlayStation, they would be more than happy to work with Sony on that. But you know, the next Elder Scrolls, Elder Scrolls 6, do you make that available on the PS5? Or do you make it a PC and Xbox exclusive to keep people on your platform?
We've seen Sony kind of cave to certain consumer pressure. I mean, think about the cross-platform with the Fortnite stuff. Eventually, they relented on that.
And they did.
I could easily see a Microsoft campaign with, you know, Elder Scrolls 6. You can get it on your, you know, your Nintendo. You can get it on your Xbox. You can get it on your PC. You can get it on your toaster. You can't get it on PS5. And like, they could easily press Sony hard enough to be like, if you want the Elder Scrolls, and we know you do because, you know, everybody loves it. Look at how successful Skyrim was for you. If you want that, then you got to throw us a bone with xCloud or whatever. This is all a big... a big chip to throw on the table for Sony, or for Microsoft to throw to Sony, I should say. And so, yeah, there's a lot of ways this can be played. It's really just a question of how's Microsoft going to play it, how's Sony going to respond, and where do we end up?
Well, the other side of that is that, you know, games like The Elder Scrolls 6 and probably Starfield cost like millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars to develop. So do you even want to take that chance and make it exclusive, like limit how many people can get it at that point? You know, it might still come down to the install base of the PlayStation 5. If the PlayStation 5's install base is that much bigger than the Xbox's, we're talking about PC here too. There's a difference because, you know, in the previous generations, it was just like, you know, take Titanfall, for example. Titanfall was only available on the Xbox. I think Titanfall would have did much better if it was available for Xbox and PC on launch, you know? So you got to take the PC, you know, side into the equation. And it's not just like PC Games Pass, it's PC Steam too. They're putting everything everywhere. So, you know, I honestly don't know how they're going to do it. You know, that's the thing.
I have to think, because the thing too is it's like, maybe you don't own a PlayStation and an Xbox. Like, you have to make a choice there. But I feel like most people have a PC maybe not a gaming PC, maybe not a full-fledged rig, but I think most people have like a PC in addition to whatever console they have. And I think in that case, like Microsoft, when, if you start to include the PC in your install base, or at least your numbers for potential sales, it makes the PlayStation install base dramatically less relevant. I think they have room to play with here. They have room to negotiate and play a little hardball with Sony. And also Microsoft's got, you know, more money than a lot of people, that if they need to eat, they can eat a big loss. That's not going to be pretty. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they should sit there and, like, you know, give Starfield out for free, but I mean, they can eat a bit of a loss there if they needed to, if they know that their end game is, we want xCloud on the PlayStation. How do we get there? And if we have to, you know, if we have to get a little bit rough with Starfield, we can do that.
Yeah. And on top of that, like, you know, you did mention that a lot of people would have PCs, right? You know, if they can get, you don't even have to have a PC that runs well. You just have a PC that you need a PC that has decent internet access for xCloud. And that's one of the things that Microsoft, I think, is really going to be pushing here. I mean, look at Cyberpunk, right? A lot of people who could not play Cyberpunk well on their PCs, or could not play Cyberpunk well on their console, turn to streaming services to play a better version of Cyberpunk, essentially.
Stadia, yeah. Your shining hour was here.
Yeah, you know? So I usually try to, like, make speculation of what this could be, but I just don't even, I'm not sure. Like, there are too many variables, I think, and we'll have to see. And the thing about determining what platforms you're going to develop for, that has to happen kind of early, you know? So I'm curious to see what games are going to be exclusive. I think it's going to be smaller titles that are going to be exclusive, which don't necessarily push console sales, or at this point for Microsoft's platform sales, you know. But like I said, they're in this space where they just want Xbox everywhere, you know.
This might be the kind of thing too, like you said, like there's so much lead time with the development for these games. We may not see the actual fallout for this until the PlayStation 6. And whatever the hell name Microsoft possibly comes up with for the next Xbox.
And the thing, I think we're still thinking about this in a console war style fashion.
Yes.
The only person participating in the console war is Sony. They're the only person there because we know Nintendo dropped out of the console war with the Wii. Microsoft dropped out of the console war in 2016. And now, like, we're still talking about from that perspective. And for Microsoft, it's just kind of like, we'll take a look at the numbers and see how, like, what works for business. What their important thing is that they just want you in some type of Xbox service. That's what they want.
Well, so this might be the kind of thing too, where Sony needs a good hit in the face to realize, like, hey, the console wars are over, snap out of it. And so losing Bethesda games and then having Sony or Microsoft coming at you being like, let's make some kind of deal. Like, here's what we can negotiate with. That might be the kind of thing to make them realize, like, oh wait, we can still make a ton of money without actually, like, fighting with Microsoft.
Yeah, I think for Sony, it's a little bit more difficult because, you know, their first party titles are what bring people to the console. And then they also make a ton of, when people have the console, and a lot of people, this is what happened to PS4. A lot of people have the console. That means when they play their multiplayer games, their friends are going to play on that console. And then people just end up buying more non-exclusive games in their console because that's where they prefer to play it. And when you have the larger install base, then developers are usually focus more on your platform. It just kind of it's a snowballing effect, and it kind of worked out in their favor. But if they realize there's no console wars, like, they can't, like, Microsoft is a software company. You know what I'm saying? The strategy that they had to, you know, release maybe one or two good exclusive games in a year, so that you drag people to your console, I don't think, again, that's just not going to be as effective. Like, I don't think they can beat Microsoft on the software side of things, right? Like, how could they possibly, how are they going to beat out a program or service like Games Pass?
They're not. And especially the problem too is, like, they've almost been caught flat-footed because PS Now is not competitive with this. PlayStation Plus is not competitive with this. And don't get me wrong, I love my PS Plus account. My 5-year-old today, he's looking over the PlayStation. He's like, Dad, you have a lot of games on here. I own like 3 games. It's all games I got off PlayStation Plus. That service is, I've loved it on the PlayStation, but I mean, Games Pass, it's, I mean, they it's like what Netflix for video games, basically.
Pretty much. And then on top of that, when something leaves for a while, you can buy it at a discounted rate if you wanted to. So, but yeah, I mean, I wonder what their strategy would be to switch. I mean, what it sounds like to me is that they are, for right now, it feels like their strategy is to release exclusive titles on the PS5. And I think they're going into their backlog and remaking some of that, not remaking, but, you know, taking some of their older games and releasing those on PC. You know, Horizon Zero Dawn was published through Sony on PC. I don't know if Death Stranding was. I'm not sure if Death Stranding was published through Sony on PC. There are rumors that I think some some Naughty Dog games are going to make their way to PC. Or I'll put it to you like this. A while back, there were job listings for people who knew how to work with NVIDIA tech, right? NVIDIA hardware and stuff like that. And so that put a lot of speculation that Naughty Dog was also going to be making some of their games available for PC. I mean, cross-platform is the future. Like, you know, put the games where the people are, you know, don't make them come to you, go to them. So yeah, I am curious to see what Sony does. But in terms of Bethesda, there are 20 Bethesda titles that hit Games Pass, and they'll have upgraded features for like Xbox Series X. So like, you know, you can play some of those games at 60 FPS now and, you know, stuff like that. So, but in other Xbox Series X and S news, turns out that the Series X and S are receiving updates that PlayStation 5 is not. And this is an article from Eurogamer, and it, you know, was talking about how Overwatch recently got an update on the Series X that allowed for higher frame rates and refresh rates, but that same update is not available for the PS5. And Call of Duty Warzone and Rocket League did something similar. And Psyonix, and that's who makes Rocket League, told Eurogamer that in order to get 120 FPS on the PS5, it will require a full native port versus just a minor patch on the Series X. And, you know, that may seem minor, but that's a really big deal for a few reasons, right? One, obviously, a minor patch is, they don't have to completely remake the game, right? Like, you know, they don't have to completely, you know, port it over to the to a different console. So it's significantly cheaper for them to do that. But the reason it's like it's a big deal between the consoles is because developers tend to favor platforms that are easier to develop and support. You know, it's one of the reasons why the Jaguar got didn't do well. If I remember correctly, I think it's the Jaguar that was hard to develop for. Developers had a hard time making games for it. So when, you know, with the added difficulty of making games, the games kind of sucked on it.
I was going to say, sounds right. I think it was the Jaguar.
Yeah. So, you know, if developers are seeing that, oh, the Xbox Series X and S, like you can, you know, we can do these little, like, you know, not even low, but, you know, big quality of life improvements to these games, you know, with minimal effort, I think that means they focus more on doing that for those consoles versus, at least for right now, the PS5, where they'd have to make an entirely new port for it.
The thing, too, though, is you mentioned Call of Duty and Overwatch. Like, we know those, I mean, Call of Duty gets a yearly refresh anyway. Overwatch right. has a refresh coming in the near future.
Right.
At some point, you know, it's coming along. I don't know if there's anything planned for Rocket League necessarily, but I think it might be the kind of thing that, you know, the like at some point they will have to put out a PS5 version, just, you know, as far as the consoles go on over time. It may not make sense for them to do it right now, or they may still be working on that. So it might just be the kind of thing where, because the Xbox is sort of this, you know, again, like kind of like leaving the console wars, leaving the whole concept of like the console generations behind, the Xbox is like a modular increment. It's easier for them to, you know, just kind of go along and take what's existing and work with that. Whereas for the PlayStation 5, you still got to look at it like the old way, where it's like, okay, like we got to completely redo this game to push it out for this console. When does it make sense in our business cycle to do that? Okay, you know, for Overwatch, that'll be coming out in 2023. So we'll do that then.
Well, first of all, it wasn't just Call of Duty. It was Call of Duty Warzone. That's standalone. That's a service game. Okay. So that's going to stay the way, that's going to stay the way it is. But Overwatch, yeah, I mean, there is an Overwatch refresh coming, and there is a, an engine update coming for both Overwatch and Overwatch 2. But I mean, the 120 FPS is a big deal because, especially for multiplayer games, it gives you a tremendous competitive advantage. It does. And I've heard people say, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Okay, you're still playing on 60 FPS then. Like, there's no way. There's no way you're playing on 120 FPS and saying it's not that big of a deal. Or maybe you are playing on 120 FPS on a 60 hertz monitor. You know. But yeah, it makes a tremendous deal. So, I mean, actually, I think even on that Bethesda video they had, they were talking about the Xbox backward compatibility team and how much work they've put into their product. And that's, it's not just, you know, recent with the Series X and the Series S. This was with the Xbox One. They did some amazing work for backward compatibility with the Xbox One. And it's funny because anytime we bring up backward compatibility, people always like, ah, whatever. And they laugh about it. Like, I don't want to play old games. I want to play new games. But now, more than ever, it's backward compatibility is extremely important because we're in the age of service games, you know? And so your old game is your new game. Like, you know, it's ageless. Like, it's going to continue to play. So we need, you know, when we get new console hardware, which, you know, if Microsoft does, you know, if Microsoft does what we believe they're going to do, which is, you know, increment the hardware faster, then yeah, you're going to need like really good backward compatibility support, you know?
I've realized I might be going through some kind of like midlife crisis because all the games that I'm playing lately have been Final Fantasy 12, Crash Team Racing. when I got the Final Fantasy 7 remake, although I haven't actually played that, you know, Mass Effect 3, all these games that came out, they're the ones I'm all playing again. And I wonder like if at some point, like you just age out of buying new games, but I don't know. I'll be stuck in like the 2000 to 2010 for gaming for the rest of my life.
Dude, I'm so backlog. I'm gonna be playing those games throughout this decade. Like that's kind of how it's going. That's why I can't wait to completely finish Cyberpunk or completely finish Night City Stories so that I can go back to playing my backlog. You know, I'm like smack dab in the middle of Final Fantasy 15. I can't remember what the fuck happened. So, but yeah, let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about Naughty Dog rumors, and this is another one that I think we had planned on talking about last week, but you know, this article is from GameBite.com, and there's a rumor that there's going to be a new Uncharted collection called the Uncharted Chronicle Edition and DLC for The Last of Us Part 2. So the Uncharted Chronicle Edition, I said collection, but it's edition, will have all of the Uncharted games. So the last Uncharted collection came out, had Uncharted 1, 2, and 3. This one is going to have Uncharted 1, 2, 3, 4, and Golden Abyss, which is for Vita, right? And actually, it's also, which was for Vita, I should say. And it's also rumored that it's going to be for PS5 and PC. So that would kind of confirm what I kind of talked about earlier, if it happens. It's still a rumor. Also, there is a rumor, like I said, for The Last of Us Part 2 expansion or DLC, and it's going to be called Darksides, and it's supposed to star Abby, and she'll discover the truth behind her hidden memories of the past that will spur her toward her new future goal. And it's supposed to be a standalone expansion, just like, I forget the name of the one for the first one, but that was a standalone expansion as well. And there's also a rumor that there will be a multiplayer mode attached to it, which is going to be Battle Royale. And this is supposed to be released for the PS4 and PS5 sometime in early 2022. I think it was called Left Behind. I think that's what the name of the DLC was for the first Last of Us. But that came out sometime, like quite a bit after the game came out. I'm pretty sure they finished the game, released the game, and then worked on the DLC. So, in terms of the Last of Us Part 2 DLC, I mean, I am curious. Like, I would like to see what it is. I mean, I was hoping they were going to do was, if they did a DLC, it would be Abby trying to get to the Fireflies. That's what I was hoping they would kind of do. So maybe it still will be, but now they're talking about Abby having some type of hidden memories. Like, what hidden memories? You know, obviously she doesn't know either because they're hidden. So I mean, I don't want it to feel like they're pulling something out of their ass. You know what I'm saying? It will make sense to me for them to fight their way to finding the Fireflies, you know, if you beat the game, you know, and hopefully, and actually if you didn't beat the game yet, I'm sorry. I just spoiled a little bit for you.
We've talked about it before on here. Maybe okay. Not to that degree, but I feel like, you've had enough time.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm usually pretty strict about that, but I mean, there's nothing we could do. It's part of the topic. There's also rumors that Naughty Dog is working on a new IP that is a sci-fi type of IP that it has something to do with portal time travel, but there's been no official word, obviously, because it's still a rumor. But I mean, it would make sense because the last generation just passed, the PS4 generation, is the first generation Naughty Dog did not deliver new IP. You know, you had Crash for the PlayStation. Then you had Jak and Daxter for the PS2. You had Uncharted for the PS3. And then The Last of Us came at the end of that. Then The Last of Us Part 2 and more Uncharted games. And yeah, this will be the first time that they didn't deliver any new IP. And you know why? Because Sony was comfortable in playing it safe. That's why. That's why we need Microsoft backs, folks. That's what Microsoft being on top, like, you know, on top of their game is going to have, you know, get better PlayStation games delivered. I can guarantee.
If Microsoft was better at what they did, would Joel be dead?
I'm pretty sure he'd still be dead. So, but I am interested in Uncharted games coming to PC. I'm in the middle of the Uncharted collection, and I was actually going to go back and finish it so I could, because I've already played Uncharted 1 and 2, but I want to just play through the series again and then play Uncharted. I never finished Uncharted 3, so I want to finish that, and then I want to play Uncharted 4 because I never played that. And, you know, if they announce it sooner than later, I'd just wait for this, and I'd play through the whole damn thing again. You know, get my Steam achievements. even though, like, I mean, because the first Uncharted can be a little rough. I will admit that. The first Uncharted can be a bit rough because the shooting is just, oh my God, like, it's not great. For guys wearing Hawaiian shirts, they sure can take a lot of bullets. Like, they sure can take a lot of bullets.
I know we talked something similar about Mass Effect, where like the combat in the first Mass Effect is a bit rough too. And it's like, was there something about like these trilogies where the early, like what came out like between games 2 and 3 that allowed all the developers to figure out the combat? Or does it sometimes just take a game to realize like, okay, like now that we got the first game out, we can actually refine what we did and really get to the core and the essence, and we're good from there?
Well, you know what? I think so. Both Uncharted and Mass Effect, I think the developers did not think about those games as shooting games, right? With Mass Effect, they're like, yeah, this is an RPG, so even the shooting can be, you know, kind of, you know, random and off, and the better you, like, you know, the more built up your character is, maybe the better your shooting is. And with Uncharted, they're like, well, this is an adventure game, and it's about platforming and solving puzzles, and yeah, there's going to be some shooting. But I'm sorry, if you have guns in your game, those guns need to work well. When people see guns in your game, when they shoot, they expect it to go where it's going to go. They don't expect to deal with bullet sponge enemies wearing Hawaiian shirts that are human. It's like they didn't have any special powers. You know what I'm saying? They didn't take a pill. They weren't radiated or anything like that. They were regular dudes in Hawaiian shirts taking like 8-9 bullets to the chest. If you shot them in the head, you were better off. You know, it only took it took less ammo to do. But, you know, that's the thing. And yeah, you're right. In the second game, they ended up fixing it, you know, so in both cases. So
is it possible that this was all sponsored by the Hawaiian shirt industry trying to promote how tough their shirts are?
I don't think so, Nick. I'm just going to move on from that joke. yeah. So let's talk some details. Actually, some details on Halo Infinite came out. And this is from comicbook.com. But I think there was a video released where the devs were answering questions. So I think that's where most of this information comes from. But just a couple details. There's going to be day night cycles and a weather system, and the types of enemies you fight will depend on the day and night. So, like, you know, whether it's day or night, there's going to be wildlife and different environments. What the wildlife does, I don't know. If the wildlife just runs away from you, or you can pet it, like if it doesn't really do anything, what's the point, in my opinion? But it'll be there. I think the original thought was that this game was going to be open world. I think at this point they've said several times the game is not going to be open world. They're going to have an open world approach in the design, but for the most part, it's not a true open world game. They said missions will allow for multiple approaches. That's what they're saying. Also, no dual wielding. Why? No playable elites. Why? You're going to have random encounters, I guess. That can be annoying, to be perfectly honest with you. And you can have the ability to knock things off Zeta Halo, which is, I guess it's the location, Zeta Halo. I hate to sound like a somebody is nagging right now, but I don't believe anybody asked for that. And dynamic cutscenes are dependent on day of a time of day, weather, and what weapons you're holding. Okay. It feels to me like they're trying to update Halo for modern play. And I can understand why you'd want to do that, but I don't think anybody's getting tired of the Halo playstyle. As a matter of fact, if you look at Doom did the exact opposite of this. Doom went back, looked at how the game played or the spirit of the game, and basically they took that and brought it into a new game in Doom 2016, and it did amazing. Doom Eternal, like, so I'm playing Doom Eternal DLC now, the Ancient Gods. Holy shit. That game, that DLC plays like a modder made it, and they modded the regular game to make it as hard as possible. That's what it feels like. It's like, yo, why is this flaming rope here moving? Why? Oh, now I gotta fight these motherfuckers in the fog? Why? Like, you know, it is hard. It is fucking hard. They let you know from the beginning that it's hard. When I first loaded into the first level of the DLC, I died within 15 seconds of starting. Me, I died within 15 seconds. I was like, oh shit, they serious. You know? And so I put my serious pants on and I started playing the game. You know? But yeah, like that's the thing. But like what I was trying to say is that, you know, with Doom, they took the opposite approach of trying to modernize it. They didn't give the Doom Slayer regenerating health. You ass better go get a health pack, you know? You know, they didn't add reloading or, you know, anything like that to it. You know, it was just like shoot until you're out still. And that worked out really well for them. And for people who play Halo and fans of Halo, like, they're not looking for an update, right? Here's the thing. This is why I'm so against them kind of changing it to be more modern and more open world. Like, Halo is an arena shooter. Arena shooters work best with tightly controlled, choreographed spaces and fights, right? It makes it way easier to predict where the player is coming from, where the player is going to be, so that you can build levels around it and build events around it to make the game good. So the original Halo, I played the Master Chief Collection 5 years ago at this point, maybe six, I think five. And it holds up to this day. That game came out in like 2001, I think. The Halo 1, I mean, the graphics, even with the updated graphics, didn't look that great, but the gameplay itself was great. It was really good. And that's because they did excellent level design with that game. And it also makes it easier to develop the AI as well, because it's like everything's it's pretty tight, and you can have choreographed gunfights, you know? So, you know, you kind of take that away when you are making random encounters, or you can approach it from all these different ways. Cause now it's like, well, what if they come from this way? What if they come in from that way? What if they switch, you know, approaches in the middle of the fight? Like, what are you going to do? Like, you have too many variables. The more variables you have in these situations, the, I'm not going to say the worst, but like, you know, you just can't, it's not, yeah, I guess I will say the worse the gunplay is going to be. And that's why people play Halo. I mean, obviously a lot of people play Halo for the, most people obviously play Halo still for the multiplayer, but a lot of us play Halo for the single player, because single player is great. I have yet to play a bad Halo game. My least favorite is Reach. I will say that, but even that has good level design, you know? So, I don't know. I'm still going to get the game and play it and make my final decisions there. But for right now, I'm not necessarily liking what I hear. So, all right, moving on from that, let's talk a little bit about The Last of Us TV show and how it will deviate greatly from the game at times. This is an article from Eurogamer. And I guess Neil Druckmann got interviewed. And he says, I'll just read what they have here from some quotes that they got from him saying, things sometimes stay pretty close. It's funny to see my dialogue there from the games in the HBO scripts. And sometimes they deviate greatly to much better effect because we are dealing with a different medium. For example, in the game, there's so much action. You have to train the player about mechanics. You have to have more violence and more spectacle to some degree than you would need on a TV show because you don't need to train the player on how to use a gun. That's something that's been really different, and HBO has been great in pushing us to move away from the hardcore action and focus more on the drama of the character. Some of my favorite episodes so far have greatly deviated from the story, and I can't wait for people to see them. And I think this is kind of expected, right? Like, we knew different things were going to happen in the show because the game is mostly action. I mean, The Last of Us is like a 20-hour game, I think. And the bulk of it is action. I mean, in terms of cutscenes, they might have an hour or two. You know, that's how much actual story you get unless you count, like, finding papers and, you know, things like that. And, yeah, I guess you do have times where the characters are in the midst of the game and you're moving from place to place, like when you go to Bill's town and stuff like that, and he's talking. So, you know, you do have that stuff, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely things that are going to change. There's going to be characters that you didn't meet in the game that are probably going to pop up in different events that, you know, happen and stuff like that. Cause you know, when you move through certain parts of the game, like, you know, you're just moving from area to area to area, stealthing, you know, the enemies, and, you know, that's that.
It makes sense that they would say that, just because, I mean, this is one of those things you hear even with respect to, say, like, you know, a lot of the comic book adaptions that you see in movies and whatnot is, you know, people are like, oh no, it should adhere to the source material and they should try to keep it as close as possible. And some of the stuff that works in comics doesn't work in movies or TV, and vice versa. Some of the stuff that works in movies and TV don't work in comics, and it goes for the same way for games. You know, each medium has what it excels at, and each medium has things that it cannot do. And, you know, you need to use that. I mean, one of the problems is that, like, yes, like at a certain point, like, a game can become like a movie. And what happens is there, you just get an excess of cutscenes where you're not doing anything. That's not a game. That's basically a playable movie where you're making a decision every so often. And if you've got a game like The Last of Us, where the gameplay is solid and a lot of it is action, if you're going to translate that into a, you know, a TV series, then yeah, you're going to have to rework that. So I don't think this should come as a surprise to anybody, but I do know that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, you see this anytime any sort of medium, you know, any product jumps mediums, where they're like, no, keep it as close to the original as possible. I want to see like a panel per panel remake. And you're just not, you know, a shot for shot remake. You're not going to get that with The Last of Us, you know, for a video game like The Last of Us to be translated to a TV series, you were never going to get that.
Right. I mean, I still think they need to keep some of the hardcore violence though, because it definitely, you know, I hope they're not trying to soften it up. I don't see why they would. It is HBO, right? I don't see why they would, but
It just seems like maybe the amount of it, you know, and also the pacing of it, that maybe like they needed some violence early on, like they were saying in the levels where you're learning the mechanics of the game. They put those levels in explicitly as tutorials. They don't need those levels to play the same way, or those scenes to play the same way, because the whole reason that was put in there was for a tutorial. Like, it once you sit down and break down, like, what is the story and why did this exist in the game? Does this exist to serve the story, or does this exist to serve the game? You know, once you sort of, you know, work out why everything is there, and then you can work it around. I would expect there will still be hardcore violence. It sounds like there's still going to be hardcore violence. It may just not be in the same amount, I think, is what you'll see. I'm sure there will be scenes where you're shooting stuff in the head and whatnot. Not you're shooting, Joel's shooting stuff in the head, but it's not going to be like to the same degree that it was in the game.
Right. So, let's go ahead and move into our last topic here. We're going to talk about the Activision Blizzard layoffs, not the ones that they just did, but the ones that are apparently coming up. So this is from PlayStationLife.net, and I'll just read what they have here. It says, less than a week after Activision Blizzard underwent a round of layoffs, a company representative has confirmed to Games Industry that the management isn't done axing its workforce yet. This time, it's employees in Netherlands, Germany, France, Spain, and UK that are in the line of fire. According to Activision Blizzard representatives, development and customer support employees will not be affected. However, publishing staff will be let go because players are increasingly choosing to connect to our games digitally. We have shared plans with our teams in Europe for how we would evolve as an organization, adapting to this change to serve our players and best positioning the region for further growth, reads the statement provided to Games Industry. Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead, interrupt me.
Oh, no. Didn't we talk about something recently where Activision Blizzard was one of a bunch of publishers that were getting in trouble for not respecting, or no, maybe it was Valve. It might've been Valve, but I think it was also Activision Blizzard, because like in the EU, like you have to sell all your games by country, and like if you like put in the wrong country or whatever, you could get the game for a different value or whatever, and the developers weren't respecting those, and so they all got fined.
Yeah.
I wonder if this has something to do with it.
Maybe. Well, we'll circle back around to that. It says, we'll be taking extensive steps to support all employees and ease the transition for those of our colleagues who might be impacted by these proposed changes. These layoffs come amid record profits for Activision Blizzard. What's even more preposterous, that is, Chief Executive Officer Bobby Kotick's reported $200 million payout, which investor group CTW has largely criticized. As reported by Kotaku, this figure is based on performance under Kotick's. Under Kotick, Activision Blizzard continues to meet financial targets, and due to a shareholder value creation incentive clause in his contract, he continues to collect millions on top of his base compensation, also worth millions. That was the article. So, layoffs are they always suck. They're never a good thing for people. They're only good for the company, which is why the company's doing it, of course, you know. And I think when people think layoffs, they might think that the company is in some type of financial trouble. They are trying to save money, you know, and that's why they're laying people off. So it's kind of like when you hear about layoffs, you think, oh, they're not doing that great, or there's something wrong financially. But the thing about companies, they're always trying to save money. Always. Always. Like, I mean, they're always trying to spend as little money as possible at every time, especially companies as large as Activision Blizzard. And one thing that I've heard over the last few weeks, the last time they did layoffs, and of course, when this comes through, finally, it's going to make the news again, and people will say the same thing, like, Bobby Kotick got a $200 million bonus while these people got laid off. These layoffs have nothing to do with his bonus. As a matter of fact, he's probably getting such large bonuses because of them laying people off. Not just the act of laying people off, but the act of making their business more streamlined and more efficient, therefore saving the company so much money and therefore increasing profits for the shareholders.
Well, I think it's important, like, because you're right that, like, if the layoffs are tied to his performance, and in this case they're not, because these layoffs are coming down the line and he's being rewarded for past performance in this case, but
right.
But in that case, you could argue the past performance is related to the prior layoffs that have been done.
Yeah, that's what I was meant. Yeah.
But the thing is, it's not like, oh, I'm laying these people off and that money from their salary is going directly into Bobby Kotick's paycheck. What it is that they're looking at the company, looking at what the company's doing, and they're saying, okay, this division here, these people, we want to change what they're doing. And if we're going to change what they're doing, we don't need some of those people, or we don't need any of those people. We're going to open up a new division that's going to do different things. And so in that regard, like, yes, let me say this, as somebody who's been laid off three times, layoffs suck. They're terrible. But to sit there and criticize Bobby Kotick, or like, to sit there and criticize Bobby Kotick, especially for the stock incentive, he got lucky on that, because I want to know, like, what the Activision stock looks like in a non-pandemic world. Like, they got a huge boost out of the fact that everybody was home playing games for the entire year. And, you know, and to their credit, they did what they needed to do with that. And yes, it also sucks to lay people off during a pandemic. Don't get me wrong. Again, as somebody who knows that personally, that sucks. But this is a bit more complicated than just saying, like, oh, Bobby Kotick's a greedy bastard and he shouldn't be laying people off. I mean, I don't think anybody I don't think anybody who's thinking about the world practically would imagine that a company would just be like, okay, like, we're going to change what this division is doing. We're just going to let these people be employed here, even though we don't need them to do what they're doing. And we're just going to continue to pay them to do nothing. Like, that's not going to happen. And I know for the prior round of layoffs, people got 90 days severance. You know, in Europe, some of the countries that have even better severance packages, like, you're required to get like a full year severance. For the US, 90 days severance is amazing. Like, that is a very nice severance package. And I don't want to say that they're taking care of these people in the way, you know, I don't know if they could do more. Obviously they have a lot of money and resources to play with here. But they're not kicking these people to the street and saying, find a job down, and leaving them in, you know, down and out.
I'm going to say they could do more and just not fire them and move them to a different division. That's always a possibility.
But that assumes that they have a need to do that. They have room in that division. I mean, it depends what they're pivoting to. I mean, in this case, as they pointed out, one of the things that they discovered in the pandemic, and I'm sure part of this is because of the pandemic, people just flat out aren't going to stores, you know, retail stores as much as they used to, that if everybody's buying digital, you don't need a publishing division, or you don't need as big a publishing division. It makes sense. And if you're expecting that trend to continue well after the pandemic's over, then, you know, why would you continue to keep these people around? You would want to cut that back, because at some point you're going to be like, okay, we got 10 people and five of them are sitting on their hands. So, you know, is that a little bit cruel? Maybe. Is that a little unfair? Probably, but that's the way it is. And it would be different if this was, oh no, like, we've got too many developers and we're cutting the developers. Even the last round of layoffs was the 800 people across Activision Blizzard. The whole point was, we want to invest more money in developers. We want to take money from the non-development parts of the company and put that into developers. And so there, you know, think about it like a game that you're playing, where you've got like SimCity or something, where you've got different resources. You know, you've got one pool of money to pull from, and, you know, how much are you going to throw at your fire department, your police department, and your your roads or whatever, your street maintenance, and, you know, you're moving those numbers around. You do that, you've got little virtual firefighters, little virtual police, and little virtual road construction workers that are all getting laid off whenever you move those numbers around. And it's the same. It's the same thing here, basically. He's adjusting the spreadsheets, and unfortunately, there are people's jobs tied to those spreadsheets. But that's the nature of it. I think this was handled about as well as it could have been handled by Blizzard. You know, Activision Blizzard, I should say. You know, as far as all you know, I mean, yeah, you know, the decision sucks. Yes, being laid off sucks. I know that. I'm not saying, like, oh, you know, good for these people. It sucks to be them outright, straight out. But, you know, like, this is an inevitability. The companies are going to, you know, make changes like this. And, you know, even though your company's doing well, your job in particular might be vulnerable if the nature of the business is changing. And, you know, if you're working in publishing, physical publishing, the production of physical goods in an increasingly digital market, I would hope that you're aware of that. I would hope, you know, it's like, you know, watching The Office. That was one of the big jokes on The Office, was that they're printing, you know, they're a paper company in a digital world. And that's why, like, you know, the early seasons, that's why they were in financial trouble, because who's buying paper when everything's online? It's, you know, you need to be aware of, you know, you need to be aware of the greater industry when you're in a job, as far as, you know, what, you know, do I need to watch out for? And I feel for all the people that got laid off, and I hope they find somewhere new, but, you know, I don't blame Activision for this necessarily.
Right. I mean, I hate to say it, but Activision doesn't really have a responsibility. Like, so if you look at any, like, I guess, not any, businesses, what's the word I'm looking for? Mission statement. There are a lot of businesses with their mission statements, that will say that their mission is to bring value to their shareholders and stuff like that. Right. That's their number one priority. And that means, one, obviously making profit from your products, but also, two, streamlining business so you have more profit. Like, they want to make as much money as possible for the shareholders. And yeah, that kind of tells you where you stand as an employee. You know, that's the unfortunate, like, especially working for large companies like this, like that is the unfortunate side effect, of that. And this is just one of those things where they're trying to streamline business. It's not like they were just like, well, you know, we think we could work leaner in this place. You know what I'm saying? They're actually pivoting away from physical publishing. I mean, they're still going to have physical publishing, because once the, you know, pandemic's over, it's still gonna be brick and mortar stores and, you know, stuff like that. But trust me, like, people who were hesitant to do digital publishing to purchase stuff digitally, and I think it's mostly a console base that was probably more hesitant to do so, now not so much. You know, like, it's awesome, like, you know, remembering, oh, that's right, this game comes out tomorrow, and I could be playing it at midnight. You know, I could be playing it at midnight, as opposed to waiting for the next day to go pick it up from Best Buy or whatever, you know? So, I mean, that's just, go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, they released at least for Blizzard did, they released a World of Warcraft expansion, and there was no launch party, there was no, you know, I'm sure there's a box in the stores, but, like, there was no celebration of that fact. I mean, I got my collector's edition through Amazon, and, you know, I mean, that's the other thing too, is it's all, you know, you do the digital pre-order ahead of time, and then you get the benefits from what you pre-ordered right then and there, you know, months before the actual game comes out. It's, I mean, and we've all seen this. We all participate in this. I'm sure we've all bought stuff online and used, you know, used the perks and whatnot. It's not the, you know, it's not the same world it was 5-10 years ago, and it's unfortunate, but this is part of the consequence.
Right. And I think it might sound like we're defending Activision, but there's nothing to defend. That's the thing. This is kind of like how it goes with these companies. That's why every time this happens and there's a big uproar about the layoffs, is kind of like, one thing you got to do, unfortunately, as an employee, as somebody in the workforce, you have to be looking at trends. Like, we haven't, you know, ever since I've been, you know, an adult, I'll say, and I've been an adult for a while, for a little bit now. Okay. It's not like it was before, where you got a job and you just kind of kept that job and you retired at that job. That's not like, and you were really invested in that job, because you knew if that job started to go under, then you know, you'd be in trouble, right? Then you kind of, your fate wasn't entwined with that company. And we don't live in, at least in the United States, I'm not going to speak for the rest of the world, but, you know, we don't live in that type of, like, I guess, job market anymore, you know? Like, because, you know, jobs are going to do, like, you know, they say business are people, but they're not. Right, businesses are machines. They're machines that make money, and they're going to do what they need to do to make as much money as possible. So what you have to do as somebody in the workforce is you kind of have to be able to look at trends and see what's happening with these trends and try to stay ahead of them, you know, in order to keep, to stay, I don't want to say relevant, but to keep your value high, you know? And I think, cause I, you know, I work professionally in IT, and IT kind of switches that a lot faster than a lot of other industries. So it might be easier for me to say that because I'm constantly looking ahead, like what's up and coming. I should look into this. These things are being used. Let me look into this, you know, and that way I can kind of keep my value up there. So I do understand that it's not as easy for some other fields to do that, but you do need to keep your, you know, you need to be looking at trends and making sure you're staying ahead of it.
The only thing I will say is that, like, you know, okay, so Bobby Kotick has this clause in his contract. If the stock performs to a certain degree, he gets $200 million. The timing sucks.
Right.
Because, like, you never want, you know, Bobby Kotick, you know, even last time it was, you know, they announced the layoffs at the same time as they're announcing record profits. And now it's, oh, Bobby Kotick's getting a huge, you know, bonus and people are getting laid off. Like, somebody in the company needs to have the job of like, okay, like what's going on and like, when can we make sure things get announced? And obviously there's probably way more factors than just the PR nature of it. I get that, but it's just, you know, and maybe to a degree they don't care because ultimately if we're all us being upset at Bobby Kotick doesn't do anything for their stock price. If it did, he would never have gotten that bonus because we've been upset with him for a long time. I say we as like the proverbial, like not necessarily myself. I'm the games industry public defender. I have to defend him. I have to like him. He's my kind of guy.
I do want to bring up one thing. How bad has EA fucked up over the last 15 years that they're the bad guy more so than Bobby Kotick? Because during the, like, you know, the Call of Duty, like, you know, the Modern Warfare 1, 2, and 3 years, Bobby Kotick was the worst person in the games industry. And then out of nowhere, you know, just EA with that RKO out of nowhere, you know, taking the spot. How poorly they have done, like, over the last, like, you know, 10 to 15 years in terms of, obviously, as a company, they've done well. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of player perception and stuff like that, they've done pretty poorly. So I just want to let that sink in a little bit.
I don't know. You know. I mean, even the Guillermos were running their you know, like, band of assholes together over at Ubisoft. And, like, Bobby Kotick is, you know, or EA, you know, like, they're not nearly the villain that Bobby Kotick or EA is.
Right. There is a video. And I have to find it. I watched it on YouTube. I'm going to say at this point, 11 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. And it is a spoof. Maybe actually it might be 12 years ago because it's a live action Metal Gear Solid 4 spoof where a guy's playing Solid Snake and Liquid Snake. You know, there's somebody playing Liquid Snake, but there's like a crossover with Halo and Master Chief. And Activision bought Bungie. This is before Bungie split off from Microsoft. And now he's using Master Chief to do his bidding, you know, like, and Bobby Kotick's actually a robot, you know,
it's like, that I believe.
I have to go back and like do the whole story, like watch the whole story again, but I watched it like, this is a mess and it's amazing. I can't remember the whole thing, but like, yeah, like that, like I said, Bobby Kotick was like the most hated man in games, but you know what? He made Activision a shit ton of money. Like you may not like his decisions, but they work because people are buying into these things, you know? So
does that movie end with Master Chief knocking Snake off of the Zeta Halo?
No, it ended with Master Chief having his armor replaced with cardboard because that's how Bobby was controlling him through the Milner armor or something like that.
What did they cut up Snake's cardboard box?
I can't remember. Maybe I have to find that shit. I have to find that video. It was like a multi-parter too. It probably at the end of the day, it was like an hour long, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, for like a 2009, 2010 video, that is amazing. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but we're gonna go ahead and close up here. I'm pretty sure we'll probably be talking about those layoffs again when they actually go live because people are gonna be up in arms about it.
Can I just say one thing? There was an article that meant that the headline was Activision pays their employees in Battle.net cards. It was a complete garbage headline because they mentioned then in the article that they get the 90-day severance and everybody who got laid off also got a $200 Activision card or a BattleNet card, like as like a parting gift, basically. Like, here's a little thing on top of that. But the headline makes it seem like they're just giving them BattleNet money and that's it. And that was a complete garbage headline. And fuck those guys, because, you know, like, do better.
Oh, yeah. So total clickbait then.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't read the article before I put it onto our list. I was going to read it. I probably would have been mad like you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, you can attack these people, but attack them fairly. Don't sit there and look and disregard the 90-day severance when you're talking about them getting paid in battle. Like, if the 90-day severance was in BattleNet cards, that's a problem. But that's not what they did. Like, you know, be mature about how you go about this, because there are legitimate problems with, you know, we sit here and often more often than not, we defend a lot of these companies based on the current state of the economy and what are standard business practices. We don't really go into a discussion about whether or not those business practices are ethical or fair, or, you know, or we should expect them. I mean, that's kind of beyond the scope of this podcast, and there are discussions to be had there. But if you're going to have those discussions, you got to come from a place of solid standing. And to make an attack like that and say that Blizzard or Activision is giving people, you know, BattleNet money as a severance, that's bullshit.
How's they going to get the clicks, Nick? How are they going to get the clicks?
Because we're not getting the clicks, because we're talking about shit honestly.
That is true. All right, so yeah, we're going to start closing up here. Let's see what we got coming up this week on the Mash Those Buttons Network. We're going to have a new SitRep Happy Hour. I know they're going to be talking about the new Justice League or the Snyder Cut.
Yeah. I'm imagining the guy from One Day at a Time making a Justice League cut.
We're going to have a new Dropping Spicy Ready Room. That is an Apex focused podcast. We're also going to have a new Dropping Spicy, which is an Apex focused podcast. Ready Room is more so about community feedback and stuff like that. So that's what they're going to be, you know, talking about there. We have a new Warcraft Reloaded. That is for WoW Classic. If you enjoy WoW Classic, we're going to have a new Push the Point finally. The season previews are starting, so that's going to be coming this week. A new Double Tap as well. And a new Wonders Tales for Final Fantasy 14. Yes, sorry, 14. A new Torn and Goblin. That is our Warcraft Story and Lore podcast. You might hear a familiar voice on that. And we're going to have a new Night City Stories after missing one last week. Last week was just all types of fucked up for us. Well, for me, so... because both my podcasts didn't go out last week. So, but yeah, so that's what's coming up this week on the Mash Those Buttons Network. If you want to keep up with what's going on with Mash Those Buttons, you can follow us on Twitter, which is twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. Nick, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network on WoW Talk, where we talk about Warcraft news and guild management. Also on the Torn and the Goblin, as mentioned, where Katie and I talk about Warcraft story and lore. This week, we go over the Necrolord Covenant campaign, which I enjoyed playing through. Lots of twists and surprises there, so check that out. And yeah, I think that's all I'm doing.
You can find me on Twitter at Josh Stradamus. You can also find me streaming on Twitch sometimes at twitch.tv/churchofjah. You can find me on my other podcast too, which is Night City Stories for right now, which is our Cyberpunk 2077 podcast. Right now we're getting into the second half of Pan Am, of the main story mission with Pan Am, where you're going to have to take down the AV and get to Anders Hellman. So we're going to be talking about that this week. But yeah, you can listen to that and Nick's podcast. Just go to the Mash Those Buttons website and you can find them there. You can also join us on our Discord, which is mash.gg/discord, if you want to discuss this show or any of our other shows, or just, you know, meet up and play some games. And you know, I encourage you guys to reach out with comments and questions, so you can do that on the Discord, or you can do so on Twitter. And you can also do it just by emailing us at contact@mash.gg. If you enjoy the show and you want to help us out, the best way to do that is to share the show with others, and also to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. If you want to take a support a bit further, you can visit mtb.gg/support to see all the ways you can support Mash Those Buttons. A couple ways to support: one would be like Patreon, which is patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. And you can help support Magic Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month and gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. We do have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. You can also drop us a Twitch sub if you like at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. We have Humble Bundle affiliate links and also PayPal one-time donations. So those are all the different ways you can help support the network. Once again, it's mtb.gg/support. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. So with that, we are done for the night. We'll catch you later.
Have a good week, everybody.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.